Welcome to another episode of Inspired Artist Podcast with me, Sergun Kaur. Today I am having a conversation with my friend and percussionist, Clayton Campbell. Clayton plays with me when I go to Bhakti Fest or anytime I'm in the Los Angeles, Santa Monica area where he's based. He is a mainstay at the Bhakti Yoga Shala in Santa Monica, which is one of my favorite places to enjoy kirtan. And he is not generally the center of attention, let's say, because he's the percussionist. So I love that I got to interview someone who was not the front person. He is a body worker. He's an excellent and well-seasoned, constantly seeking new education in healing modalities, which he'll talk about. He came from sort of a dark past, as many of us did, and you know, went through his own journey, which he talks about. And he will refer to his lady partner, Rhiannon, in this when he says she. So if you're curious who he's talking about, that's who he's talking about. And she is also a musician. She does stuff in the DJ world. So this was a really exciting one to hear Clayton talk about doing body work on the set of Avatar and Where the Wild Things Are and all of the wonderful and spontaneous things that have happened in his life to bring him to where he is. Let's go.
We have two bedrooms.
Cool. Just in case you need more than separate sinks.
Yeah, we, you know, because she'll be down at the studio until like 3-4 in the morning sometimes, and I have clients all day starting at like, you know, I have to wake up at 7 in the morning, so just shut the door and go in there.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I was thinking how people, married couples used to, or you know, couples, but back then they were all married, used to sleep in different rooms. That was, yeah. I mean, I guess of a certain class, not
right.
The peasants, but there's something to be said for that. It's nice to have your own sleep space.
Yes.
I say that I haven't had my own sleep space for 5 years now because my kids crawl into bed with me. And
of course.
We have like one huge bed. So we have a king size bed and a queen size bed next to each other. And
you all sleep in the same room?
And we all sleep in this one room. This was, so Hedy Munder once heard Deepak Chopra talk about how they just had a bed room. It was a room of beds and everyone slept in there. And he really liked this idea. And I was like, okay, that sounds cool. So, I mean, we haven't had to deal with kids having nightmares and waking up in the middle of the night, but
see how long that lasts. So when you get older, it's going to be like, peace, mom.
Oh, well, I'm hoping that happens.
Yeah.
I mean, it has to.
It's got to. You have two, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. They're going to want their own space soon enough, for sure. It won't last.
You guys are.
What? Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, Hari Mondr, he'll make his millions off of crypto and get you guys a 5-bedroom house. So each one of you has your own room.
And then maybe we'll each have a 5-bedroom house. That'll be nice. No, I don't like big houses. I mean, for other people it's fine, but I like small spaces.
I don't need a big house.
Yeah.
I just need like a nice place that if I had a studio where I could play my drums, I could at 3 in the afternoon or 3 in the morning, you know, like I'd be set.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
So
just a dead room, you know, where it's like the sound is amazing, but you can't hear anything outside of it.
When you practice drums alone, are you listening to a track?
Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes I just go play the drums and I'll just play, you know.
Yeah.
I'll just like.
Is it like a physical kind of release thing that you find in it? Yeah.
Yeah, playing the drums, it's like a drum set, you know. It's just like it's taking like a nice stroll. Like on a good day.
That's cool. I drummed a little bit in college. I did my dance teacher was married to a man from Mali, and he had a whole bunch of friends that emigrated to Providence where I was in school, and they had these big drum circles, and so I got to participate. And there was another teacher actually who was from Ghana, who so I did like the this. I wasn't very good at it, but it djembe. Felt so good. Yeah, djembe. It felt so good to hit my hands on something.
Yeah,
I remember.
Drums are good. It's a good release. Yeah, I always say it kept me out of jail. It did.
That's a great slogan. Because I think a lot of parents, when their kids want to do drums, it's like, oh, shoot.
Yeah.
You have to like, listen to this all day.
You listen to loudness. You want to be bailing your kid out of jail or getting them off Oxycontin or something. I mean, look, I partied and I partied hard and I survived. I was one of the fortunate ones, but my friends are getting into stuff and I was like, nah, I'm going to go practice. Cause I wanted to learn things, you know, like my goal was, you know, I wanted to be able to play Slayer South of Heaven from beginning to end. Perfect. You know? So it's like, hey, let's go party. And I was like, no, I want to learn this.
And I have goals.
Yeah, give me goals like in music. I want to learn all this Judas Priest album. I want to learn this song. So I was just doing that all the time instead of going out and raising hell, you know.
So do you still do other kinds of music besides like kirtan?
I play like singer-songwriters, but mostly it's just kirtan now.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so do you find you're like pounding your drum kit as hard as you would in other venues?
No. It just depends. Like I just got these tracks from, I went to Denver and recorded some songs with my friend. He was like he's kind of like a real successful producer guy in Denver and he's a great musician. So he's like, I've always wanted to record with you. So I want you to come out and I'm going to do this album and I want you to lay down all the drums to it. And I was like, cool. So it's just like rocking. It's like real kind of like heavy. It's like the Black Keys, but heavier.
Okay.
And it's the best way to describe it. And so we did that and, you know, he just sent me tracks last night and it's good. You know, I'm like,
oh, fun.
But I can tell because, you know, I got the music and then he sent me the music. Then I went there and I had to learn, you know, 8 tracks and put the drums down to these tracks in like 4 days. But playing drums like that, there's a different kind of physicality that you need. So there's a conditioning. It's like, hey, I want you to go run this half marathon. Well, you're not going to start walking a week before then go run a half marathon and do decent at all. So I can tell that my motor skills were slower. I don't know if that's being older or being out of shape or both.
Oh, it's like, it's not like a physical hand thing. It was like a brain thing.
It's a brain physical and a psychological thing. What? Usually what it is my psychological part of my brain is ahead, way ahead of what my body can do. Mm-hmm. Like I have stuff in here that's, you know, I have like files, but my body can't produce it.
Yeah.
Like how I'm hearing it, you know. Like in my head, I can play a whole Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan song, you know, on the tabla. Uh-huh. But I've never played the tabla. So there you go. You know?
So. Maybe it's like past life remembrance or something.
Yeah. Did we start this thing?
Oh, yeah. We're recording. I don't know what the beginning of this was. It started with a tour of your house. I'll start it somewhere.
There you go. Cool.
I'm doing this real casual. So I've explained this in one of the episodes, but just in case people aren't listening to every single one. So the idea is just I know all these really cool people and they're musicians and they're doing this spiritual music thing. And I have really cool conversations with them that don't necessarily have to do with music, but sometimes they are. And I thought it would be really cool for people who, you know, see you play, Clayton, to know something about you that's not like something you would get from an interview, you know, but
right,
to get
right.
a feel for for who you are.
I think it's cool. Yeah. Thank you. I'm honored.
Yeah.
I'm honored. Yeah.
So what is going on in your life currently besides the recording in Denver, which is really cool?
Yeah, that was like a year and a half ago. I'm getting ready to go out to Bhakti Fest and play that shenanigan. And it's great. You know, it's fun to get out there, but it's just a lot of work.
Who are you playing with?
I'm playing with Rob and Melissa from Seattle. I'm playing with Jens Jarvi from Northern California, Govinda Sanrada. And I'm playing this pre-immersion thing with Saul and Govinda Sanrada. Okay. But I got asked to play by like 1, 2, 3, 4 other people, but I'm not playing. The schedule just didn't match up.
Yeah.
And then on Friday, I'm actually driving out there Wednesday. Thursday is Rhiannon's birthday, so we're going to celebrate her birthday out there. And then Friday, I'm driving back and working on clients.
Oh, okay.
I'm driving back to Santa Monica, working on clients Friday, part of Saturday, and then I'll drive back out there Saturday, and then I have a rehearsal Saturday evening. Uh-huh. And then I play all day Sunday, and then I come back Sunday night.
Yeah, that's busy.
Yeah. And then Monday, I work on people and play a kirtan. And then Tuesday, I'm waking up and I'm going to New York City for 4 days.
Cool. What for?
To go see music and to go work on clients.
Oh, sweet. You have clients in New York.
I do. Yeah.
How did that happen?
Kind of just organically. I used to work at the Beverly Hills Hotel. When I first moved to LA, I was like, I was a restaurateur and I was selling wine and all that stuff in Napa. And I was like, I wanted to get back to working on people, which is what I went to school for. I'm a Rolfer and I do visceral work and massage and all that. And I wanted to get back to that. And I was really getting way back into yoga after taking, 10 years off. So this was 2005 when I started getting back into yoga, and I started doing yoga like in 1992 or something like that,
Wow.
Yeah. I was partying really hard
and doing yoga.
Yeah. But then I would go do yoga, but this is in Dallas, Texas. It was going to this lady's house. There's no yoga studios. There's nothing, it's like,
Is that where you're from? Is Dallas?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I grew up in Dallas. I was born in Fort Worth, Texas. Okay. Fort Worth, Dallas. So I was born in Fort Worth. I was raised there. And then my mom married a dude and we moved up to Oklahoma. Then I graduated high school from there and I moved back to Texas.
Okay.
Yeah.
I had this friend in school in France who was British, but she was Indian British. And her dad got transferred to Dallas, Texas when I was in high school. She went there. She had kind of a cult. That was kind of a culture shock for her.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. It's an interesting place. I moved out of there in 96. So I went on a tangent. So when I moved to L.A., I said three things I wanted to do. I wanted to get back into my body work. So I wanted to get my hands on people and I wanted to work at the top spa in LA. And so in my mind, being an outsider, the top spa was the spa at the Beverly Hills Hotel. You know what I mean? So, and it was.
What would the top spa be?
Hell, I don't know.
Okay. That's a good one. Why not?
I was like, go for it. And then so that was that. It was to get an office and a mentor. And so I got my office in Santa Monica, literally a block away from the Bhakti Yoga Shala.
Oh, really?
But, yeah. I'm on second in Wilshire, but I would have been there since like April 2008.
Oh, funny.
And then Shala opened like a year later, something like that. Just ironic, It was just very, everything was organic,
Yeah.
And then, and then third thing is I wanted to work on movie sets. I could work on movies.
And like with people. With
people
like,
doing body work. So when I came here, I set these intentions, and like a month later, I got a job. I got my office in Santa Monica. I got a mentor, which is still my mentor today. He's one of the best body workers ever. His name's Harvey Rudarian. He's been doing it since like 71 or two. Mm-hmm. And then I put application in at the Beverly Hills Hotel, and they weren't hiring. So I got a job at this place called the Argyle. It's in the Sunset Tower Hotel, which where the spa was, used to be John Wayne's apartment.
Wow.
Yeah. So he used to have like a cow and like some livestock in the where the patio is.
No.
Yeah, seriously. It's like old Hollywood. It's where like Frank Sinatra lived there. Errol Flynn.
Wow.
Ava Gardner. That's where Frank Sinatra met Ava Gardner, and they became like a couple and got married.
So that sounds like the best spa.
It was weird, man. The place was haunted. Seriously. Oh, okay. Seriously. We had people had to come in and like clear it. And so right after that, I went and met this guy who was like one of the top chiropractors in LA just by chance. And I was like, yeah, I want to work on movie sets. And like, boom, that night, I got a call from, hey, this is so-and-so with Where the Wild Things Are. It's a Spike Jonze movie, and we need someone to work on the set with the Jim Henson Creature Shop. And I was like, boom.
Oh, my gosh, that's so fun. You got to work on the puppeteers?
Yeah. No, I got to work on the people in the costumes for the movie, like the actors in the costumes.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, this is like manifestation at its finest, man. Like, and I just saw The Secret like a year before or something like that. Like, this shit works, you know? And then go like a month and a half. So that was in like June. So go like August of 2008. And then get a call. Boom. Hey, this is Nicole with Beverly Hills Hotel Spa. We want you to come in and do, you know, work on someone and just to see how it is. But we have a space open, and boom, I got the job because I'm a Rolfer. So like my skill set is way above like normal massage people. Not to sound precocious, but I've got a lot of training, you know? Mm-hmm. So it really helped me get that job. And then literally I came home, and like 2 days later, I was like, hi, this is Jennifer. I'm calling from Avatar. And I was like, okay, it's Avatar. What's a movie that we're doing with James Cameron, and we need someone to come work on the movie set once a week. And we don't know how long we're going to need you. What's your day rate and all this stuff. And I so I was like, what's your budget? And you know, they're like, we pay you. I think they were paying me like $500 a day for like 7 hours of work. And I would work on people. And I worked on the Avatar for like a year.
Wow. So
yeah, it's crazy. I'm like friends with a bunch of those people that are doing Avatar 2 and 3 and like,
oh, are they?
Yeah, my friend Tim and all these dudes. Yeah, yeah. They're like, you know, this is crazy. My friend Robbie, he like won an Oscar for Avatar for the animation.
Oh, right.
But yeah. He's just a foul-mouthed Irishman, you know? He's just like stressed out because he's got three boys, you know? And he's just like, Jesus, you know? So that's how I came to LA, and it was just, everything was organic, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was thinking about that because I grew up a little bit in LA too. And so my parents knew a lot of people that, you know, were in the business, and that was like a normal thing. And they literally just look like normal people. Like when you come to LA, you're probably surrounded by people who have worked on all sorts of things, but you wouldn't recognize them because they're not, they're not the star of the film or whatever. But and even if they are, they probably look pretty normal walking around doing their grocery shopping.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't, you know, it doesn't faze me. I grew up around rock stars, so I'm just kind of like, whatever. You know, it's just kind of what I met Gerard Butler the other day, last week.
I don't know who that is.
He's the guy who's the actor. Have you ever seen the movie 300? I'm trying to think of what he's been in. That's the one I can only
I haven't seen a lot of movies, Clint.
It's all good. Anyway, he's a he's a movie star.
Not recently, anyway.
But I didn't even realize who the hell he was. And he was like in the yoga class I was playing. And he was in it.
Oh, fun.
Came up and he was like, that was really great. And I was like, oh, cool. Thanks, man. And what's your name? And he's, oh, I'm Jerry. And I was like, oh, cool. And I'm talking to him. And in my head, I'm like, this dude looks familiar, you know. But
yeah.
I mean, if I met Brad Pitt, I'd be like, hey, I'm Clayton. What's your name?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm not gonna
it does sort of get when you know a lot of people who are doing whatever, it is just they're just people, you know.
Just people, man.
Trying to explain that to Hattie Munner. We grew up, my parents were friends with the Bridges. So like we grew up going to Jeff Bridges Christmas parties. And because they're real people, you have all these like stories, like drama stories about them, right? So
yeah,
they're very much, yeah.
I mean, that's what made
regular
me
regular peeps.
They're just regular people, and that's, you know, I was on this path to like all I wanted to do was be a rock star when I was like, you know, a teenager and you know, in my early 20s. That's all I wanted to do. I mean, I was around friends. My friends were selling, you know. You know, tons of albums. And I mean, my one friend, his band was the first heavy metal band to have an album debut at number one. Wow. This is like early 90s, you know. So it's around all this. But then I saw like the other side of it, which was you got all these hanger-ons, everyone's talking shit about you, everyone's getting an opinion. You give an interview, they blow your words out of proportion. I mean, it's like,
is that why you decided to get the, like, go to school and learn how to do Rolfing?
Yeah. I was in Dallas, and I was an investor in this bar, and I was like getting ready to invest in a area rug business with, I'm going to blow your mind with this one. So I used to hang out with a bunch of
I'm ready.
I used to hang out with a bunch of Persians in Dallas, Texas. And so I was going to invest in this area rug business with this dude, these two brothers that were Jordanian and this one guy who's Saudi Arabian. And that business turned out to be like one of the top five area rug businesses in the country today. And so that was one thing I was doing. But I was also like, I was a valet and a DJ at one of the top topless bars in Texas, which was in Dallas. So I was like 21 years old and I was playing music in Dallas and I was partying, but I was also making like 60, 70 grand a year of cash under the table, wow. Which would be like, you know, $110,000,
$120,000
today. Oh my God. So I was just rolling, man, from like 20 to 24. I was saving a bunch of money. I was investing, I was partying. I had a two bedroom apartment. I let my friend, who was like a total, he's a kind of a loser, but I loved him. He was my boy and he lived there and I was just doing it. And, but around me, I had people that were just dropping from heroin. I was like, you know, just not good. And I partied hard, but I never did that stuff. I never like shot anything up or like smoked crack or nothing like that. I'm not saying it all is what it is, but you know, it really affected me. The thing that really changed is I started snowboarding. So I was going to the mountains a lot. And then one day I used to have hockey tickets to the first NHL team. The professional hockey league, National Hockey League, the professional team that moved to Dallas from Minnesota called the Dallas Stars. So I had second row glass behind home goal. I had two seats and I had best seats in the house, man. And I was doing it. You know, my hair was down to my waist. I mean, I was just doing it. I was living life the way I wanted to be. And I had all the money I needed, you know, and beautiful girlfriend, just whatever. And my friend Jason, who was a huge, he was like a really, really talented tattoo artist. He was supposed to go to this day game on a Sunday. I remember it was so vividly. And I went and knocked on his door at like 1 p.m. And it took him a while. And then I started banging. And then he came and he opened the door and the light was kind of shining in on him. He was just like, oh, you know. And I was like, come on, dude, let's go. You know, I'm here to pick you up so we can go to the game because we had plans. And he was like, bro, I can't go, man. I'm not holding it. I'll get sick. We get sick, and he didn't have any smack to.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he didn't have any. I'm talking street lingo.
No, you lost me a little bit, but I understand
yeah.
now.
Yeah, he didn't have any heroin.
I'm not holding.
He was not holding, so he didn't have anything to use, so he wouldn't get sick.
Yeah.
So he was going through a withdrawal because I don't know how long it had been since he used, and this was a guy who was like. You know, this was like a Jewish dude who had like dreads that were paint colored Rasta colors. I mean, had a big tattoo studio, and I just saw him lose it all.
Wow.
And I was just like, I'm out. And I moved to Colorado and became a hermit for like a year when I was 25. Yeah.
Like and that's dropped. When you snowboarded.
I snowboarded. Yeah. And then in that time, I'd quit playing music. For about, it's probably been about a year and a half, 2 years since I'd played music up to that point. And so I was meditating a lot and living by myself and just being in nature every day. And it just came, I got this download, like I'm going to devote my life to being of service.
Mm-hmm.
And I had no idea what it meant. And there you go, man. So the rest is history. I just had a friend who I snowboarded with and his mom was a hippie. And he was a total punk rocker, and his parents were like, he was born at a rainbow gathering, but his parents are hippies, but he was total punk rocker. Amazing dude, amazing snowboarder. Josh Lorenz, one of my dear friends, rest in peace. And his mom was a massage therapist. And I was like, oh, I think maybe this is something I'd like to do. And I talked to her about it, and it got me into it. And then that's how that whole being a therapist, you know, started when I was like 27.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a crazy story.
That was a while. Then you've been doing this for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. I stopped for a little chunk here and there, you know, because I was working in restaurants to pay for all my trainings. And then, but the restaurant world is just brutal.
Hmm.
You know, you just work and you're just like, you know, work that day and you're like, I need to have a drink.
Yeah, that's funny. That was my dad's way of doing it too. My dad was a restaurateur. Yeah. He loved it. He totally loved it. But yeah, there's no breaks. It's just go, go, go.
Yeah.
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 Both my parents did that for a while. But yeah, so everything you do is very physically demanding.
Yes.
Like. Yeah. How do you handle that?
I'm tired a lot. And yeah, sometimes people think I'm moody, but I'm just, but people, people don't know what I do during the day. Do you know what I mean? I'm one-on-one with people and I'm dealing with people's traumas and, and psychoses and things that are, like, I'm not a massage therapist. I'm a therapist. I'm like releasing things, energy, stories, holding space for these people.
Are they talking?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Obviously, I was like, no one told me I was going to be a psychologist, too. I mean, you know what I mean? So yeah. I'm like working through all this stuff with these people and clearing it's challenging. And yeah, you gotta really be strong. And so, you know, I play kirtan because it's my practice and I go there and I leave and people, you know, I've heard you're kind of gruff. I've heard, you know, you're short to, you know, you're not like I'm not Mr. Cheery spiritual guy, but I'm not trying to be that.
Is that why you always thank me for afterwards? Cause I've never noticed that about you. I wouldn't characterize you as a grumpy person.
It's not that I'm a grumpy person. I'm just, you know.
Or gruff.
Yeah, I'm nice, but I'm to the point.
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean? I just,
yeah.
I don't have time for like games.
See, actually, I really appreciate that. So I think I take that at the opposite way is I'm like, thank you for just answering my question.
Totally.
Because I think a lot of times, especially spiritual people, we're trying to please people so much that instead of answering their question, we're trying to figure out what they're asking so we can answer it in the way that is going to make them smile or something.
Totally.
And it's like very roundabout and a little annoying.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's bullshit. Mm-hmm. I don't agree with it at all, because if people were just to the point, hey, do I look fat in these jeans? Yeah, kinda. Oh, I can't believe you said that. Well, then don't ask. You know what I mean? Like that's my mindset, you know?
Right.
And the coddling in the spiritual community is, I just don't have time for it.
No.
So people in that world can think that I'm a little gruff or harder on around the edges, but I'm not. I'm just being truthful, and I'm making sure that I'm not being a jerk and like saying, you know, but I'm just to the point, and people can't deal with that. And the more people do these spiritual practices, the more sensitive they become, or they put a story around them, or whatever. And it's like, so when I tell you thank you when I'm playing with you after I play with you or whatever, I say that from my heart, because I truly try to live in gratitude all day, every day. So when I say thank you, I really mean like, thank you for this opportunity. Thank you for thinking of picking me to play with you. Thank you of appreciating my art, appreciating my talent, how I show up and express myself. And you know, and I think so it's from just the most deepest, genuine place, you know?
Yeah. And I really appreciate your talent. I do, because I don't think we've ever had a rehearsal before playing, and it's never gone.
We've had one or two.
Oh, that's true. Yes. You're right. Yeah. There's
Satnam Fest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's true.
But still.
Yeah, and then once when you and David came over to my dad's house.
Yes.
That's right.
Yeah. I love playing with you. I appreciate it. You have such a beautiful voice, and I really enjoy it because you're in it for you.
Yes, I am.
Yes.
I like that. Yeah.
You know, I'm in my practice.
That more and more.
I'm in my practice. I play kirtan for me, and I really believe where it's like, it's not a performance. I'm there playing for me because it's my practice. And if 1,000 people want to sing back, then that's great. But if I go there and I'm in a bad mood, or I'm not feeling great, and it lifts me up a little bit, but I still have that edge, that's fine. I'm not there to sign autographs and be congratulated. Or, I mean, it's great to hear people say, thank you for your art, or thank you for that kirtan really moved me. Or I really appreciate that. And I think that's beautiful, but I'm still not showing up for that.
Right.
And I think a lot of people lose sight of that, especially in this kirtan world, because there's a lot of rock stars in it, you know.
I like when people come up to me afterwards, because it's what they're basically saying is, oh my gosh, your music allowed me to open up, and I got to really have this experience of who I am. And so that feels really good to me. But I also recognize that it's them, you know, like they did it. The space enabled it, or, you know, the music enabled it, but.
Yeah. Your practice and your expression connected with them.
Yeah.
On a level that allowed them to get out of their story and be open to something new.
Yeah.
That's what kirtan's doing.
Yeah. It's a beautiful thing. And I mean, I think other kinds of music have that, you know, ability.
They all do.
Too, you know, yeah.
Even Britney Spears as much totally. As, and Celine Dion, as much as they get on my nerves.
Yeah.
Like I loathe them in a way. there's that person, there's that white woman in Ontario, Canada that just like, you know, I'm having a bad day, just put on a little Celine Dion and girl just brings me up. You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, that's the essence, you know, and that's, I still listen to Slayer. I love Black Sabbath. Yeah. You know, I listened to a Slayer song yesterday after not listening to them forever, this old one.
I don't think I've ever heard a Slayer song.
Sure.
Ever.
I just
have to go listen now.
It's heavy. It's hard. It's loud. They speak about demonic stuff. Uh-huh. And I was just like, wow, man, so good. And this was, it brought me back to when I was like 18 and what I was going through and that angst and that rage and but the musicianship, and it's just like, damn, yeah. These guys are killing it, you know. So that was my church.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, that's the beauty of music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I used to go for the female singer-songwriter complainer kind of things to get my angst channeled.
Yeah.
There was a lot of that in the 90s.
The Alanis Morissette's.
Yes. Oh, and you know what? I was just thinking this morning about how she would come into to Revolution. Did you ever come into you came into Revolution, right?
I came in there, but you worked there, right?
I did, yeah, for a couple of years. Maybe not even that long.
I came in there, like, not a lot, but I did come in there. I played there a couple times, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was funny. The guy who worked with me, who didn't really work. He was an actor and he was on a music video with her. Yeah. He invited her out on a date and I think they came there like afterwards or something, but.
So that's how she got introduced to Revolution.
I think she would come in anyway, but I'm not, cause I don't know the whole story. She may have been coming in just to say hi to him. But she was taking yoga at Yoga Works next door. Yeah.
So. I played with her brother, Wade Morissette.
Oh, yeah, he's a Kirtan artist.
Yeah, and then he like quit and became like a farmer or something like that.
Oh, all right.
I played with Wade at the Charlotte one night, and the Alana showed up with her husband.
Oh,
they're real cool people. I mean, just.
Yeah, she seemed.
Yeah,
really cool.
Just so down to earth. Wade's real cool.
Yeah.
He's just down to earth people, good people.
Yeah.
You know.
Into
Wade
yoga.
Was talented funny. Too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wade was really talented, but I think he got his belly full of the politics in the Kirtan world. Mm-hmm. You know. So he's just like, I'm gonna be a farmer and just do this on my own. Which is really what it's about.
Yeah.
So
do you think he felt like he was in her shadow a little bit?
I don't know. I don't know him well, so I can't speak for him. But I mean, I didn't get that playing with him.
Yeah.
He
was doing his own thing anyway. Yeah. Wasn't.
And he's good too.
Yeah, I've heard some of his music.
Yeah, good.
It was a while ago, but I remember liking it.
I remember he showed up and I was like, I'm playing my ass off for this dude. And I played like, and then I saw a sister come in and I was like, I'm friggin' knocking this one out of the park. And he was like, damn dude, for no rehearsal, we just killed it. And I was like, yeah, we just killed it.
Yeah. Was it just him and you?
Yeah.
And did he play harmonium or guitar?
Guitar.
Guitar. I really like if you're not gonna rehearse, the two person band, I think is so great because it allows you so much freedom, especially when one is you have no melodic components for the and the other one is all melodic. It's like the sky's the limit. He could choose to go anywhere and you'd be able to go there because you don't have to figure out like, wait, where are you going? Are you modulating? You know.
Right.
Yeah.
It's one of my complaints. Yeah, trust me. Yeah.
That you want to be able to do.
No, that less is more. Less is more. I would rather, like, you know, me and Govinda's we do the Monday night kirtan, and Govinda's asked me, you know, whenever we started it, I don't even know how long ago we did it now. It's 7 years maybe.
Oh, wow.
But he's like, hey, you know, I got this class, and he was teaching two classes on a Monday. And he's like, think about dropping one and doing a Monday night kirtan based on what Shamdas started at, I think it was Shamdas at Jiva Mukti back in like the early 90s. So it was like Shamdas did it, Jiva Mukti. And then when he stopped, or when he quit that, I think let Krishnadas take it over. Okay. And that's how Krishnadas started like building his thing, you know. I'm don't quote me on all this, but it's kind of rough memories of what I was told, and I don't know if it was, you know, anyway, so we did that.
And you have a fact checker come on later, so I'll get this all squared away. Yeah. Cool.
And so we started it, and it was just me and Govindas, and then like a month later Arjuna came and started playing mridanga, but it was just us three. And it was like, when it's just me and G, it's great, and Arjuna, just us three, it's like amazing. But, and then, you know, everyone sees what you got something going and they want to be a part of it, which is normal. I don't blame them. But just days that I just wish we had that, you know. And you have people playing kartals all over the place and like banging plates together and guitar and your ears are ringing, man. It's just like, it's a lot.
I think there's less of that in the Kundalini yoga scene, because it's like not meant to be as loud, maybe, so people don't think like, oh, you're gonna need another. But that's something that's interesting about, because I play with Monica a lot. You remember Monica, who plays guitar? Mesa. so she leads kirtan.
What's Monica's last name?
Monica Page Subia.
Yes.
And actually she was talking to me in the podcast I did with her about Krishnadas and Jiva Mukti, so we have another source for that story.
Sure.
which confirms yours. But she does the, you know, more of the bhakti chants, and then I do more of the kundalini chants, and it's actually a really great mix. We like kind of go back and forth, and she'll do one chant and I'll do one chant, and it'll be fun. But she wants all these singers, and I don't mind having them there, but like for me, it doesn't necessarily add to what I'm doing. so it's funny. So we have sort of I think we've kind of dropped it, and we've just decided to have like one or two. But I have to tell them, I'm like, don't start singing along in the beginning. Just wait. You
know? Yeah. I mean, I have to direct on Monday nights, and a lot, or every night if I'm playing, because I come from the school of less is more. Mm-hmm. The slower you play, the harder it is to play.
Yeah.
You know, anyone can play fast, because then it's just jumbled, but can you play fast and be precise? You know, so less is more. And the most, you know, I stress this, I can't stress this enough. The most important notes that you play are the most important notes are the ones you don't play.
Yeah.
And most musicians don't get that.
Yeah.
So if they don't get it, so if you're trying to tell a musician, hey, don't play right now, everyone's ego gets, you know, like, whoa, dude.
Yeah.
What are you saying that for? Are you trying to be bossy? Or...
That's why we have the best violist ever, in my opinion, because she will wait like the entire song and come at just the exact right moment. She has like no need to be playing all the time. And then it's just she just plays the perfect thing at the perfect time.
Yes.
And Monica does the same thing when she sings, which is why I feel like she's enough, because she'll just sing at the right times and add a harmony here and there. And I love that. The other day we were at this festival, and nobody could make it except for one of the percussionists I play with in Phoenix, John. And so it was just me and him. And he actually, for this one song, was just playing cajon and bells on his ankle. And I was playing harmonium. And we, like, this song lasted for the longest time, but the intensity was so amazing because it was just really slow, and then it just slowly built and slowly built, and it was so fun to play. But I realized it was because it was just the two of us. Like, if there had been more people, they would have gotten antsy and wanted to come in, you know?
Yeah.
It was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that can be cool too. I mean, you can have great shows with bigger bands too.
Yeah.
Say that, but.
Well, you know, it's like, I talked to Govindus about it, and there's days he's like, yeah, it's, you know, less is more. And I like that. And then there's days where he's just like, you know, I just want people to be a part of it and enjoy mm-hmm. it. And everything. So I get both, you know, yeah. It's like, and you can't argue with it. There's days I come in there with my ego, and I've worked on 20 people because, like, Monday night kirtan is my Friday night. You know, it's like, because I start working on Wednesdays.
Oh, okay.
And then, you know, by Monday night, I've worked on 10, 15, 20 people.
Uh-huh.
You know, so and maybe played a gig or two in that. And so I'm just, so I might come in there and be like, you know, if I hear a cartel, like cartels get a pain in my existence, man. Because if they're not played right, it's horrible for a drummer. And, you know, so I come in there with my attitude. So I know that, you know, yeah. I know that. And I try to keep it in check and just make sure other people are having fun too. But still trying to make sure that it sounds good and, you know, my ears aren't ringing at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fun.
Music.
Ah. Yes, music.
I love it.
Me too.
I mean, I'm a music nut. I'm like a music historian. Like, you know, I took Rhiannon to go see Kamasi Washington on Friday. He's a jazz dude from LA here. He just played this big place. He played the theater down at the Ace Hotel downtown. Oh, wow. Yeah, just killing it, you know, and I just... And then the week before that, I went and saw Xavier Rudd from,
love Xavier Rudd.
Xavier's so good.
He's amazing.
He's so good. I went and saw him, you know, I've seen him a bunch.
I saw him in New York. It was a while ago.
Cool.
Yeah.
I mean, the first time I saw him, I didn't know who the hell he was. He was opening up for Ben Harper. This is at Red Rocks mm-hmm. when I lived in Colorado, probably. For early 2000s, and he's just a dude came out, you know, digits, and he's playing the one man band.
He's one of the ones like you got to see live because,
yeah,
that's impressive.
Yeah, and I think it was like during the day, and I was a little too far back a little bit, so I couldn't really appreciate it. And I was like, wow, this dude's got it.
Yeah, he's doing a few things at the same time.
Yeah, but I didn't really catch it. And then I went to saw him again later, and I was like, whoa, this guy's good.
Yeah.
But then the week before that, I went and saw the Melvins, which are like, Kurt Cobain used to be their roadie. They're all from Aberdeen, Washington. And then the Melvins are like the godfathers of like heavy, that grunge world, that sound. But the Melvins are way heavier and they're brilliant. Huh. They're one of my all-time favorite bands. And they've been around since, you know, mid-80s. And so they played the Troubadour. And I went with this, do you know Pagan?
No.
You know Pagan George?
Not by name, possibly by face, but.
Yeah. He's like,
I don't think so.
I'm going to try to describe him. He's got long dreads.
That's a great name, Pagan.
Pagan. He's Puerto Rican. He's from Queens, New York, and all that.
Okay.
Like,
no.
He's 60. It looks like he's like 40. he's an amazing yoga teacher.
Huh.
Amazing. Great healing therapist. But anyway, he's like, you know, he's the one I roll with to a lot of stuff. He's total brother, you know, because he can do the kirtan world, but then also go check out metal, you know. But I love country too, you know. I love country music too. So I love
really.
Yeah, man, my dad was a bull rider, you know, a bareback rider. I mean, like, my first memories are going to rodeos when I was a kid. Full on.
Yeah. You are an eclectic human.
Well, I've had a different ride for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's really cool. I love that about LA. There's so many great stories. I mean, I guess everywhere, but
yeah.
It seems like the people that gravitate towards LA, they don't have the same story you have, but similarly surprising.
There's a lot of mystics here.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people that, you know, I'm a mystic. I know I'm always like searching, moving and seeing and seeking and, you know, trying to learn more, you know. I'm going back to school next year.
What for?
Cranial sacral training.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I make sure I find the best and I get trained by the best and one of the best in this particular form of cranial sacral. It's called biodynamic cranial sacral. It's what I find to be the most, how do I say it? It's the most profound for me to be in my practice so I can bring it into my practice to help my clients, you know. And that's in Boulder, you know, so I'm doing that.
Oh, okay. How long does that take?
It's about a year and a half.
And so you're going to move there?
No. I just go there for like 5-6 days and then it's like every other month.
Oh, I see.
And then it's like 10, there's like 10, there's 10 things. There's 10 learning modules. Yes. So you go there for 5-6 days, learn, and then you leave for 2 months and then you learn it and you put it into your practice and then you come back with that knowledge and then you learn on top of that. And so, yeah, it's just a better way of doing it. Yeah, it's
exciting.
It's, you gotta keep going. I turn 50 next year, and I'm like, you know,
nice.
50 years young. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
49 years young, and it's but I don't fall into that like, you know, like oh God, I'm getting old. You know, I'm just like such a weird thing to say. You know, I'm 40. I've been here 49 years. Cool.
Yeah.
You know, but when you hit, you're coming out on 50, it's an interesting one because you start to look back at like, wow, what a life, what things I did, things I didn't do. Did I handle things in a certain way that maybe I don't jive with me now, or I wish I handled different then? And living with no regrets, because I really, really try not to live with any regrets, but it's just like, so there's a lot of like introspection, I guess, there. And so I'm really looking at it like, how do I want to move forward?
I can see that. Yeah. It's funny. I remember vividly in my late 20s, standing in line for Saul's Sunday class at Exhale. And Govindas was standing in front of me and I knew who he was, but he didn't know who I was. And he was talking about how like when he turned 30, his body totally changed and now he gets more tired and he's like, what's happened? And I remember a few people saying that about like your 30s, that something physically different was going to happen to your body and shift and whatever. And then I remember going through my 30s and being like, cool, that didn't happen. All right. You know, and then moving on. Now I'm looking towards 40, but yeah, I think we have like kind of ideas about what's going to happen based on, you know, what other people have experienced sometimes and my parents experienced aging totally different from seems like the people now, you know, my parents' generation. Like,
well, they were smoking. Aging
is different. Yeah.
I remember my mom, she was like 65 and she was like, you know, she's like 75 now. She was like, yeah, I turned 65. She's like, this sucks. You know? I remember her saying that and I was just like, wow. It's like, you're not going to not be 65.
Right. Right.
So embrace it and like, the glass is full. The glass is not empty.
Yeah.
And I think that's what got me into the spiritual path, because I used to be an atheist. Mm-hmm. You know, growing up in the South around like all these, you know, there's churches every couple miles and they have the billboards out there. And I remember one day driving with my mom and I looked over at this billboard on outside this Baptist church, and it was like, repent your sins or, you know, burn in the lake of fire for all eternity. Said something like that. And I was
inviting.
Yeah, I was like 11 or 12. And then I went to church a couple times. And the last time I went, I like got sick.
Huh. I got physically. Did your parents sick. Take you? Are they religious?
My mom grew up Church of Christ.
Okay.
Which is an offshoot of something. And my stepfather was Methodist, but they didn't make us go to church.
Oh, okay.
It was like, you want to go? And I was like, no. But my cousins. But they didn't know.
No. Oh, okay.
No. We didn't really have like a religious family, but I just became an atheist for a long time. I was agnostic atheist.
Yeah.
But then I looked back and I knew there was something greater than me. And you know, there's some Native American in me, and I've always known that, and I always have like really read stories and read about the, you know, Native American like just way of life and how they looked at the world, and that always rang true to me. So I was fascinated by that when I was younger. And so even though I was like, there's no God, but then in the back of my head I was like, there's this thing. And so that thing is now in the forefront of my world. And I don't use the word God. It's just, there's just an energy that is pervasive,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's good. It's good. And that's why you age well and not feeling it, because you have this practice of you have these tools.
Yeah.
You have a way to come back to your home, which is the only real home that we have is our heart.
Mm-hmm.
It's not our children, or it's not our spouse. It's not our family or friends. Mm-hmm. It's us. And I think a lot of people forget that. Yeah.
Oh, but, that felt really warm in my body when you said that.
Good. Good.
Yeah, that's true. I don't say heart very often. I'll say like soul but heart has a nice feeling to it.
Yeah.
Your inner self or your higher self.
I look at my heart as like the front door to my soul. So it was like a house.
Oh, like, I like that.
No, like the soul is the house.
Uh-huh.
And the heart is the front door.
The
like
access point. Yeah.
It's like, oh, okay. Boom.
The hobbit hole into the...
Totally. It can be like that hole, that Frodo door, you know? And there's days the hinges on that door are just fucking rusty. And I'm like, wow, I got to do some work, man. Mm-hmm. Oh, can we cuss on here? Sorry.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
All right, cool.
They'll just make it explicit. Like in an explicit podcast, that's fine.
You can bleep it out.
I vowed not to edit this.
Instead of the F word, you could put Frodo.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. The Frodo door. Okay. But yeah, you know, our heart is that. That's how I see it. My heart is the front door to my soul.
Yeah.
Kind of like, and so in my heart, my soul, that's my home. That's my truth.
Yeah.
I mean, Rhiannon's my home. This is my home.
Yeah.
It can all go away.
Yep.
Next thing you know, I could be living in my car. With no one.
Yeah.
And what I got? I got to be able to come home. That's why I do kirtan. That's why I play kirtan.
I love that. I'm going to call that the conclusion of this podcast, because that is the best note ever. Cool. If people want to find you online, how can they do that?
They can go on, I'm on Instagram at Mr. Mr. Clayton Campbell. So Mr. Dot Clayton Campbell. Then go to my website, which is ccbodywork.com. And, you know, I'm on Facebook as Clayton Campbell.
Like two Campbell. C's. Oh, Clayton Campbell. Yeah, I got
CC Bodywork. Yeah. Clayton Campbell Bodywork, .com. So about it. I don't really have much of a huge.
Cool. Well, that's enough.
Thing.
Sounds like you have plenty of people to work on.
I do. I have someone later. I have a drum lesson I teach later today, and then I have a client.
Oh, fun.
Yeah.
Cool.
Good.
Well, it was a pleasure talking to you, Clayton. Thank you for taking the time to do this. I know you're busy.
It's great. It was an honor.
Have fun at
very grateful.
Bhakti Fest.
Yeah, I want to miss you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks. I'll miss it too. I'll be in Sedona though. I'm going to have fun.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. Yeah. Tell Hari Mandrasa hello.
I will.
And hope to see you guys soon. You going to be out here anytime soon?
Not planning on it, but could be.
Are you playing Satnam Fest? Are they having
maybe
one?
Maybe. Yeah, they're having a Satnam Fest. I'm invited to it. I was also invited to perform for this meditation leader in the Netherlands for a week of his events, which is like right after it. And then someone wants to do a concert in Slovakia like a month before that. So I may not want to come back to the States, but we'll see.
Cool.
Yeah. Well, see how that all works out.
You ever need a drummer to go to Slovakia? Give me a
for
call.
For sure.
I'm always down. Go do a little adventure, play some music.
I'll definitely.
Got to be a budget for that, obviously.
Yes. So that's a consideration. Am I going to get people locally or ship them in? So we'll do all that math, and then I'll be in touch.
Totally. If you ever need me, call me.
Thank you.
All right. I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Bye.
Bye, love. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. Much love.